Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by the reliable Anthony Torgrud.
6 a.m. The alarm was set for 5:45, woke me up from a pretty cool dream, and Madison decided not to come. So here we are.
Madison was not in the dream as well, yeah. Just to clarify. Otherwise, that would have ruined it. Something about Zlatan and cage fighting, I think.
Yep, that was it. Yeah. We'll leave it there.
Yep. New backdrop as well. Little rotation of the desk. It's looking really good.
Thanks. Yeah, the light, the ceiling light that doesn't have a cover on it, it just creates these beams this early in the morning. And this was how I resolved that issue. So look at us. We made
fantastic. Yeah, we're an hour closer together as well.
No, we're now farther apart, aren't we?
No, because normally we're five apart and we're currently four apart until we go forward an hour in two and a bit weeks, and then we're back to five apart. So yeah, 10:15 here, 6:15 there. Anyway, enough small talk. We've got a busy episode to do. Two recaps, two wins, which is something, and two previews, of course. But before we dive into this week's episode, thank you, as always, to our Substack founding members, Des Windsor-McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mack, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar, Rajat, and Carlo Fassi. Thank you, as always, for the support and for being our founding members on Substack. Just briefly, in the last week on Substack, and a reminder that you can go try a week for free if you haven't already, we've had the fourth and final installment of the Behind Sempre Milan series. This one's about our plans moving forward and what we hope to add both to the website, to the brand, but also to the Substack itself. Isaac did a really good bonus article on Maldini's Scudetto team being dismantled in 2 years, potentially, with the reports that some more leaders could leave the club in the summer. The bonus podcast that we did last week was looking at potential change in formations. And the newsletter article, again, as a reminder, you can sign up for the newsletter for free. And that gives you sort of the best news condensed and also a little bit of a bonus article per week. Was about the schedule that we have, in particular, some of the difficulties that might await in April if we were to go further in the Europa League. And it is the Europa League where we start this episode. First leg of the last 16 against Slavia Praha at San Siro. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't recall us ever scoring four goals at San Siro and winning a game and feeling so disappointed.
Yeah, this game sucks.
It. It sucked, man. It was rough. It was genuinely a rough game.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is we had a man advantage since the 26th, 25th minute, something like that. That's a long time to have a man advantage, so to still concede two goals after that is a bit scary.
Shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way to describe it, right? Like, it was Kier. I don't want to slate Gabia because Gabia was actually fine, but Kier did start. Teo did not look like he was off to the races. Florenzi got a yellow card early, I think the second minute, and that got him a suspension, so that was honestly fine. I don't mind if Calabria plays the next leg, so I'm cool with that. But Mike is also a card away from suspension, so he's got to really manage the way he wants to do, like time wasting at the end, and there will be, because that's every goalkeeper does it. He's not exempt to that. In fact, that's how we got the earlier yellow. So just when do they reset? Is it after the quarterfinals or after this round?
Yeah, I think it's after this round. So going into the quarters and semis, you get a clean slate. It might be the semis, but I'm fairly sure it's the quarters, which would make sense because then like we've had two knockout rounds, for example.
Giroud scored the first one. Shocker. It was a header. Leao assist. And I don't know if it... I know it was a shot from Leao, right? Like, we know it was a shot. I don't know if it was going on target, but Drew definitely popped up and nabbed that one. And that'll be the story of this game because it'll happen again later. So Leao had a good start, I suppose. Who got the second goal? Was it Loftus Cheek?
Reinders. That was the corner routine that was... I want to say it was well worked, but I don't think it really was that well worked. It was just a pass to the edge of the box that they didn't really react to. And he hit it really hard from the edge of the box, bottom corner near post. The keeper was rooted. Their keeper actually had a good game, despite the fact that he let in four goals. That Stanek guy, he was pretty good. But I didn't realise that Reinders has scored the exact same goal for AZ Alkmaar in the knockout stages last season in Europe. He put it on his Instagram and they were genuinely a carbon copy. So that's clearly something that we've looked to exploit. And then like 60 seconds later, RLC header from a corner. We ought to mention as well. So first of all, prior to the red card that was completely unforced, you know, it was when I saw it at the time, I thought that's just a mistimed tackle from behind. It seemed very strong for the referee to go in with a red card immediately. However, when you saw the replays and you saw how wrong he got it, studs up into the back of his Achilles, like that can cause some serious damage. And I'm just grateful that Pulisic is okay, to be honest. Yeah.
Three red cards in two games that he's drawn.
Yeah, man, he's a deviant. we hadn't been good up until that point, though. I think Slavia had probably the better of the play. We looked like we were still asleep. They hadn't created anything massively threatening, but they were certainly probing, and we were struggling to get a foothold in the game. We really needed that in order to swing the momentum in our favour. Then, as you say, we took advantage of it 8 minutes later with Giroud getting the goal. Their equaliser was a banger. That corner cleared. And I do think that we had a couple of opportunities to clear that before it falls to him just outside the box. But he hits it first time, bang. Maignan gets a hand to it. Arguably, maybe could do a little bit better, you know. I feel like that's a save that in the Scudetto season he makes. But with the way things are going for him at the moment, he can't keep anything out, it seems.
It was a strong shot, though. Very nice.
Yeah, it was.
Powered shot. I honestly forgot about that they even equalized until you mentioned that. And then I remembered, that was... I wasn't even mad when it happened. It was just like a damn good hit, you know.
Yeah.
Good for them. I didn't think that they would get another. They did. Yeah. But did they got the second one before we got the fourth? Yeah.
They got it. That's 3-2.
Just pulled up the stats here. Oh,
Calabria had going on,
two Six assists. Or, I'm sorry, not Calabria. Florenzi had two assists.
Both from the corner. Yeah. I guess the frustrating thing is that obviously they scored 2 minutes after we go a goal up, which is annoying in itself. That Daudera who scored was really, really good, though. He was like their standout player, to be honest, at least from what I saw. And then we score those two goals in like such quick succession before halftime. We're 3-1 up. We're changing the back line by bringing on Calabria and Tomori. And you're just thinking, brilliant. Like, we can get a couple more goals, go there with a 5-1 lead, and the tie is over. You know, we can really manage the game now. Two goals up, a man up. It couldn't be more perfect. And yet, this is where we find ourselves. 65 minutes, Ivan Schranz. Another great goal, to be honest. But this is another one where it sort of goes through everyone from a narrow angle, and you're asking if anyone could have done better. Could Mike have saved it? Could someone have got out to him quicker? Could there have been a block in there? And it comes from a set piece that we failed to really deal with. It goes over to the far side. He brings it down well and hits it very hard and controlled, but a very disappointing goal to concede. And it sort of reopened things at a time when, really, I honestly wouldn't have cared that much if we'd have... I think we did go into game management mode a little bit, but you've still got to have an element of control with a man advantage, you know? You've got to at least have 80% possession or something like that. Like, there's a gulf in class on paper, and probably a gulf that has been shown in the first half in terms of we're just a bit sharper with everything, better finishing and stuff. And yet, you know, you allow them back into the game, and they had 5,000 travelling fans who were loud throughout the game. It brought them back into it as well, and do you know what? Up until we got that killer goal, I say killer goal because it really hasn't killed the tie all that much, in the 85th minute, they were the ones pushing for the equaliser. And I think if we'd have conceded that, I don't know, man. I think San Siro would have turned, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It would have been bad if because they scored both their goals. Every goal in the entire game was scored after they were down to 10 men.
Hmm.
There's no reason that six goals should be scored by the... you know, combined after 10 men, unless they're all from the team with the man advantage. That's the only way that would make sense, but it wasn't. You know, I'm looking at the XG for the game, and we haven't even discussed the fourth goal yet, but Milan had 2.47 XG. Slavia had 0.49. And that tells you the type of goals they scored. I mean, they were fantastic, the incredible goals. Take nothing away from those, but we shouldn't be letting in goals like that. You know, no, there's just no reason for it.
You shouldn't even be giving away corners or set pieces to let them have goals, you know? Yeah. If you look at the Empoli game, which we were obviously going to come on to, I think we actually showed a fair bit of control in that. Like, we, Pioli said after that game, we played the game that we had to. So he's sort of saying, look, we know it wasn't glamorous, but we kept a hand on it at all times. It never really looked in danger. With this, it was completely different. He also said something interesting about how European games are different and he intends to play them in that way because teams want to attack. They realise that this is a... Especially a team like Slavia, they realise how much of a free hit it is, but also how big a shot it is for them to sort of shake Europe and be like, you know, we're here kind of thing if they were to knock us out. And perhaps that played into their favour a little bit as well. The fact that they found themselves 3-1 down, there was only one team that had to come out and force the game, and they did it fairly well. They tired a little bit towards the end, which is to be expected, a man down. They made four subs in like the last 5 minutes of the game. And then, yeah, I guess... we should mention Liao, who had had a decent game up until that point with his usual streaks of being frustrating and inspiring. He goes on a run, he beats his man to the byline, dinks it over the keeper. I'm not sure it's going in. It might be going in, but the defender is certainly backpedaling in a way that suggests that if he sticks a leg out, he might get... We'll never know, basically, because of the way the mechanics were going. But Pulisic arrives, and I'm thinking, is he offside there? No, he can't be, because the defender was goal side of him. And sticks it in to make sure. And 4-2... Look, a two-goal lead is better than a one-goal lead, to state the bloody obvious, but... yeah, the full-time reaction said it all. You know, the players seemed dejected, the fans... They didn't hang around to give them a send-off, shall we say, like they normally do. It all just felt a little bit like we have fucked up a good opportunity here.
Yeah, I mean, again, when you get a man advantage for 70 minutes of a game, you shouldn't be conceding anything, let alone two goals. Yeah, you scored four, that's great, but it should be 4-0 on aggregate right now, not 4-2. There's no, I mean, because the reality is they're still in it. You know, we did not put this to bed. You go back to the last fixture against Stade Rennais. We went into the second leg 3-0 up, and we won just barely. You know, we lost the next tie. So we went through, yeah, because we scored a couple more goals on the return, but we barely went through, you know. Now they already have that knowledge that they can score against us, and we're playing away at the reverse, you know. They're thinking, look, we put two past Milan at San Siro with a man down. Why can't we do that at home? You know?
Yeah.
So it definitely gives Slavia a lot more confidence than we have going into it. And I still think we get through, but it's not going to be a walk in the park. I don't want to say it should be, but it definitely shouldn't be a difficult fixture. And yet that's the position we're in. But just more on the Pulisic goal. I do think it's going in, the Liao shot, you know, and by all means, he deserved it. He dribbled like eight people on the way to it, you know. The shot is definitely on target. However, that defender, yeah, if he puts a foot out, he probably clears it. It looks like he goes for a header, I think. I think he tries to head it out, and I don't know if that was getting to it, you know, because he did start to head it a little bit early, because his head was already sticking out when Pulisic tapped it in. So I'm not sure. I think he probably does clear it, to be honest with you. And I know it's funny the way it all went down for Liao, because spoiler, he is going to be my man in the match. I think he created everything. I think he was the main threat, and then his two shots on target were. Both ended up being goals for someone else that were nabbed from him, and I don't think that was the way he wanted it for either. So, you know, if he exhibited any frustration after the game, I think it's understandable, but I don't think there's drama in the dressing room. I saw some stupid shit from the, I don't want to say the CBS analyst, because it wasn't the regular people. It was some guy I'd never seen before, but they were on CBS saying, like, Liao and Pulisic don't get along, that there's drama, that Pulisic's, or Liao's mad at Pulisic for doing it, and Pulisic did it because he's trying to stat pad, blah, blah, blah. Just a bunch of bullshit that wasn't true. At the end of the day, we're on a team in a tournament, a knockout game, and we're trying to get through, and you're going to do anything you can to score that goal and make sure it happens. So shut the fuck up and be happy we won. And here we are. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of dispelled it on Instagram afterwards as well, you know, but it's just, it's total bollocks. Liao's even said himself in multiple interviews that he doesn't really care what he gets. As long as he contributes to a goal, then he's happy. And who knows if it'd have gone in without it. But I've seen a picture here. I'm going to show it and hopefully it picks it up okay. That to me, that's Pulisic putting it in, suggests that the defender is about to clear that if he doesn't touch it. So I think it is a necessary touch, and therefore, how can we have any arguments? But
I've never seen that photo. That's a good photo.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's from Milan's official site, that one as well. So there's your credit. But yeah, that was it. Six goal thriller, sort of thriller, but not great. Tops and flops, and then we'll preview the return. Like you said, top Liao.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
He got joint highest rating on our site. He got 6.5. I agree. He was the cause of like 90% of our threat, to be honest. I think it was one of those games that that perfectly showed for me what the Liao Pulisic tandem on the wings is all about, really. It's about getting Liao in dangerous positions wider and having him drive inside, and Pulisic then being the one who's moved centrally to get the finishing touch or to drag a man across or whatever it is, rather than the other way around. You know, Pulisic isn't going to burst past 10 men and score. And, you know, Liao, for all of his height and stuff, and Pioli has said that he should be getting to the back post more and stuff like that, he doesn't seem to be doing that with his movements. So those two have actually developed quite a good relationship, and that was nice to see. But yeah, Liao's a good shout. I'm going to go with Reinders. I think he's been up and down this year, and I think it was right to give him a rest, especially with all the stuff surrounding the birth of his first son and stuff like that. But he came back in, and I thought he looked sharp. I thought he looked pretty good in midfield. Now, the rebuttal to that would be, I've just said we didn't have much control on the game and it should be down to somebody in the double pivot to exact a bit of that control. But I think he was let down badly by Adli. That rhymes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think once Bennacer came on, and granted it was, you know, just 10 minutes, we looked a lot better, a lot calmer, a lot more settled. And then obviously we scored right after. So that kind of took the wind out of their sails. But yeah, I think Reinders was definitely the better of the two in the pivot. Bennacer being probably the best, but only having 10 minutes, can't really give him that title. As far as flop goes, I'm going to go Kier. I don't have like a great reason. The other option is Mike, because he conceded two goals, but even if he got a hand to him, I mean, those were fucking rockets from incredible angles. Like, you shouldn't be letting in those goals, but at the same time, it's like, what do you get? What can you do? You know, when it's a cross face like that, like it's tough. And I honestly feel bad picking Kier, because I honestly can't remember if he did make any mistake, or if I'm thinking of the Empoli game. He didn't play Empoli, did he?
No, he didn't play. No, he did make one or two. There were a couple of crosses that came in that he like shanked behind, and he took some risks in build up that, you know, perhaps show that he's past it.
Yeah.
My flop is, I'm going to do a Maddie. My flop is Pioli. If I had to pick a player, it would be Adli. I just think he's back to his thing of alternating good and bad performances, is Adli, unfortunately. And what I would say for that, in terms of how the game unfolded, it played perfectly into the hands of a player like Adli, because they go a man down, so they're having to sort of reassess the system. They take out a man to press from the front, so he should have more space to be able to dictate the game, hang on to possession, slow things down when needed. It just didn't happen. He was another one who took quite a lot of risks in build-up, was dribbling backwards towards his own goal and stuff, and it wasn't a great performance on the eye. But Pioli, man, showed all of his tactical limitations in not even the 90 minutes. I'd just say that, you know, as you mentioned, we played on the man advantage for 70 minutes, and I think that we were the better team for around about half an hour of this game. That was up until half time. when we scored obviously the three goals in like 15 minutes before the break, 10 minutes maybe. And then for the last 10, 15, when we brought on the changes that made a bit of a difference in terms of energy, we should have dominated the first half hour and we just didn't. You know, when it was 11v11, they were the better team. We should have dominated the entirety of the game beyond halftime, or even, you know, after the red card, and we didn't. We only did so when we were able to take advantage of their drops in energy, and it leaves you a little bit worried for what's to come in the second leg. For the preview and for something that got put out separately, an interview with Jan, who is a Milan fan who lives in Prague and covers Slavia Praha for the local press over there, and he said in his prediction thing for our site that he thinks that Milan will go through, but it won't be as easy as everyone says. And he is absolutely adamant that their manager, Jindrik Trpkovski, Trpkovski, is a better tactician than Pioli. And I think after 90 minutes, I'm inclined to agree with that. You know, they adapted well to going a man down, and we'll see what the second leg brings. But yeah, Pioli flop. And let's move on to the preview.
I think the lineup's going to be fairly similar to the last Slavia game because we rested so many people for Empoli. Mm-hmm. However, I think the back line is going to be exactly what we saw against Empoli. Calabria has to start because Florenzi has a suspension. I think if we see Kier ever again, then Pioli has dementia. Tomori's fully fit. You know, he played 90 minutes, something like that. Oh, he only played 63.
60 odd, yeah.
So maybe he gets a start and then is pulled off late. I don't know, but the press, the power that we had to move forward with Tomori is so much. It's so much better than what we had without him. You know, mm-hmm. it's one of those things that you don't realize because it's been so long. But yeah, we miss him. He's the one who really helps the way we play. You know, we have that high press. Teo is free to get forward and make those marauding runs because he doesn't have to track back. Tomori's fast enough to do it himself. Chow is not a fast center back. Kier's a very slow center back. Gabia is not the fastest either. He's been aggressive and it's been good, so I don't want to attack Gabia, but none of our backup center backs are fast, and that limits what Teo can do offensively. Because if something happens and he's got to run back, he's got to sprint the whole way. And then if he gets there, he's probably getting a yellow card because he can't slow down in time, you know. So having Tomori there is really good for us. Honestly, I hope to see the exact lineup that we had against Empoli, against Slavia, with the exception of Jovic and Okafor. I would much rather that be Giroud and Liao again. But that would be the strongest lineup.
Yeah, so here's what Milan News have at the moment, who, you know, deemed to be a reputable source when it mm-hmm. comes to lineups. Chow and Tomori out, Kier and Gabia back in. So we've lost. Basically, we've lost the tie. Adli back in, but doesn't say who for. Obviously, it'd be for one of Benacer or Reinders. Liao in for Okafor. After, you know, he should be charged up after serving his suspension. Pulisic rested for Chukwueze and Giroud to come back in over Jovic. So, you know, a few changes there possible. I don't see him making the six changes that are sort of talked about there. I was thinking, look, I don't know how long Tomori and Chow are permitted to play. It might be that the way that it's gone, Tomori sort of came on for half an hour, then for a half, then he did his 63 minutes on when is it? Fucking Sunday, whatever, yeah. And, you know, now can he play a full 90? And same for Chow. Is this part of the plan? We're building their minutes up. If so, I would play them together again. Firstly, because they're our best centre-back pairing and we need to not concede a goal in order to go through here, really. Like, let's not let them get the first goal. And we need to see them build up a bit of chemistry and cohesion again, you know, and we have an opportunity to field the first choice back four, on paper, the first choice back four, you know, with Calabria, Chow, Tomori and Teo. And I think we should take that opportunity, you know.
It's a game, must-win knockout game. Why would we not, you know?
The game on Sunday is against Verona. We'll talk about that. They're not particularly... Look, we have some difficulties in Verona. We sometimes find it tough to win there, yes. But again, the priority is this. All of our eggs are in the Europa League basket. We're fighting for second in the league and essentially to try and make sure that Inter don't win the title in that game against us. Like that. That's all we've got. So we might as well go for it in this one. And it'll be a real test of Pioli's rotation, especially if we go further in this tournament, because then we'll have like the is it the quarterfinal legs between the Juve and Inter games, which is pretty tough. So I think for now you pick a strong team and you make sure that you get the job done without any fuss, like against Rennes. You know, that was another performance where we looked at it and thought, okay, we're through, but there wasn't much control there. And I'd say what we've seen so far in our three Europa League knockout games, which is all we can judge off, you know, you can't go on anything prior to that. In two of the three games, we've shown that we are not ready to win this competition. And that as soon as a good team comes along, they will expose all of our weaknesses, especially a Liverpool or a Leverkusen. So we need to start answering that. And the best way to do it would be to go there and win 2 or 3 nil. You know, their head coach said that he's absolutely sure that they're going to win this second leg, Slavia. So that's your team talk done for you. Go win. Make a statement.
I mean, that's it, right? There's what else do you say after that, you know?
I just think, you know, you look at the other result involving the Prague team, Sparta, who were above Slavia in the league, therefore in theory would be a tougher opponent on paper. They lost 5-1 at home to Liverpool. That's the reason that they're a favourite. Yes, Leverkusen drew away at Karabag, but they battled from two goals down and they're in a way in that first leg, you know, and Roma, you know, look at Roma hammering Brighton 4-0 in the first leg, who I'm almost certain are a better opponent than Slavia. Like, there comes a time when we need to just show a bit of fucking backbone and like prove that we're in this to win it, because at the moment we're not. It looks like we're not taking it seriously. Give your prediction while I just quickly look something up.
I'm going to go... I think it'll be another 3-2. Yeah, and I think we'll win it this time. But 3-2, and we're going to be behind first and probably a second time. I think they'll score, we'll equalize. They'll score, we'll equalize, and then we'll get the go-ahead late. To win it. Not that we need to win it. We just have to not lose by three. Ultimately, I think we'll get the job done, but it's not going to look good. And then whoever we get in the next round is, I mean, they're going to be looking at us like, oh, this is a good chance for us, knowing that it's smack in the middle of the Derby and the Juventus game, literally the two biggest games every season. That's not good for us, right? What do we sacrifice? Unfortunately, it's going to be the league, and that's the one that people are going to care about more. If we lose to both of them again this season, I mean, you can't lose to Inter six times in a row. That's sackable. Five times in a row is sackable. Four times in a row is sackable. Losing to Juventus twice this season would be rough, especially knowing that they're just not that team anymore. And we probably should have won in the first leg, but for a really shitty red card early on that kind of had us on the back foot, which again shows the difference between Milan and a team like Slavia, who went behind roughly the same amount and they pushed. You know, they attacked, they scored goals. Sure, they conceded four against a much better opponent, but we shell up, we cower, and that's why we lost to Juventus. Granted, it was also just a random shot from Locatelli. They didn't have anything else the entire game, but still, had we have pushed forward, they wouldn't have had that shot, I don't think. Anyways, doesn't matter. We're not reviewing that. I think we'll win, but it'll be tight.
Yeah, I just wanted to check how Slavia did over the weekend. Obviously, before that first leg against us, they'd lost to Sparta in the cup quarterfinal after extra time when Sparta had 10 men. And then they drew 0-0 with them in the league a few days after that, which was a few days before the first leg, when Sparta again went down to 10 men, and it meant that they didn't close the gap at the top of the league. They won 4-0 against Teplice at the weekend, and they rotated quite heavily from what I can see. Sparta also lost, so they moved a point behind them in the league. So they're going to be well fired up. All of a sudden, the league's back open. They can realistically win the title. They're only a point behind. And they can, as I say, they can send a statement to the rest of the rest of Europe if they were to knock us out. I mean, Slavia are a team, probably because of the league, well, definitely because of the league that they're in, that have played more consistent European football over the last 10 years than us. You know, they drew with Inter in the Champions League at San Siro. They're no mugs, let's put it that way. However, as I say, I keep saying, if we're serious about going far in this thing, then we need to win the second leg. And I don't think we do. I think we go through, and I think we go behind. I think we draw 2-2. And yeah, I just hope for a stress-free an evening as possible, but I don't see it. You know, I think they play at the Fortuna Arena or something I just saw. And apparently it's a very hostile atmosphere, as you'd expect. Like the Ren game, they'll be well up for it. Their manager said it's the biggest game. No, sorry, one of the defenders said it's like the biggest game in their history. And, you know, it will be. And they will play it as such because they've got nothing to lose. And that's what worries me. But let's just hope we get through. And then the draw for the quarters and the semis is on Friday. So if we get through, we find out what our path to the final would be. So, yeah, pretty important for 24. Ish hours away. Empoli, let's move on. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Another Sunday. No. This was a Sunday early kickoff. It was 2 o'clock my time, so it would have been like, what?
10 a.m.
your time. And we've got another one the exact same time coming up on Sunday against Verona, so get used to it. And it's the fact that we played Sunday early, it kind of reflected the mood. It wasn't a particularly brilliant game, was it? Let's be honest. It wasn't a vintage performance from us. That being said, and there's only one goal to talk about in this, so you've got to talk about the performance more generally. I was actually quite happy with how we played in the first half. I was worried that Empoli were going to sit really, really deep, as they often do, and make it difficult for us. And I was worried that with Jovic playing and Okafor over Liao on the left wing, you never know what you're going to get from RLC. I was worried that we'd find it difficult to break the deadlock, and arguably we did. And more importantly, that we just wouldn't create many chances, and that the crowd will get on the team's back after what happened on Thursday, and that it would just descend into a little bit of a farce. We actually played okay, to be fair. We had plenty of those sort of half chances where we got a man to the byline and they put in a dangerous cross where either a defender cleared it last ditch or there was a very good defensive header or, you know, our man just didn't quite get there in time. Plenty of those types of chances in the first half. You could argue that we, you know, probably didn't move the ball quick enough in certain passages, but we looked bright, we looked dynamic, and I think the goal was coming when it eventually came. Although it was offside, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, Empoli had 5 shots this whole game. Only 2 were on target. They had 4 corners, and 2 of them were from that silly Chao brain fart. You know, I don't know what happened. If the ball got behind him, it bounced off him weird. He just got all confused, turned around, and then Kalulu recovered it and then passed it back, and Chao just said, you know what, F this, I'm not going to risk it, I'm just going to clear this. He wasn't back mentally yet, so he just kicked it out when he didn't even have a man on. You know, probably could have held onto the ball or booted it upfield, but he cleared it out for a corner. And that was one of, you know, their only attacking periods. They really did not do anything for us, you know. Now, on the flip side of that, we only had the one goal. It's not like we were world beaters either. Was it a good performance from us? It certainly wasn't a bad one. I think everyone bar... I think Loftus-Cheek started pretty slowly. He picked it up towards the end. I would say Jovic was pretty invisible the entire time. And I think the way we need to play him is just as a second striker. That seems to be the only time he does well. You know, if we bring him on next to Giroud, and just let the two of them be in the box and we just throw crosses at him, I think that's the only time he actually gets on the ball. Which is sad. I don't dislike Jovic, but I we're just seeing this isn't the right formation for him. Every time he starts, he ghosts. But when he comes on as a sub, it's a goal. You know, it's very weird. I thought Okafor was lively. I thought he looked good, actually. He had the assist, right? Yeah.
Yes, yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a nice move to the byline, cut back into a dangerous area. And this is what I was talking about before. It's usually Liao to Pulisic, but having sort of a direct winger who looks to create down the left by any means, and then Pulisic makes those runs in off the right to the penalty spot. How many times have we seen that goal this season? And teams are still struggling to pick it up. Do you know why? Because Pulisic is a very fucking intelligent runner off the ball. And that's a very useful skill to have for a winger, especially one who is technically good and can deliver first-time finishes. Yeah, there were a bit of luck with that one. You know, it does hit Laporto and deflect in, but might have gone in anyway. It's tough to tell.
Yeah, I think it was still on target regardless.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, great job from the goal. And for those of you curious, that was the winner for me.
Ching.
Won a bet. If you guys remember from when Pulisic got signed in the summer, Madison and I made a bet on stream here, or stream, on the podcast. It was 15 goals and assists, all comps, but 10 of them had to be goals. So I hit the 15 a while back, and then he got the 10th goal. With this one, I was really hoping it was that tap and then he stole from Liao just for the added frustration to Madison. But yeah, sent him the Apple Cash request as soon as the offside was overturned.
Mm-hmm.
And good on him, paid it right away. And, you know, so we move forward. But
yeah,
he better, guys.
A friendship survives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that was a good bet to make. And something else worth pointing out is that, you know, for all the hype that Pulisic attracted during his time at Dortmund, and then obviously he earned that big money move to Chelsea, and he did quite well in his first season. This is already the best season that he's had in terms of attacking productivity, shall we say, in terms of goal contributions. I think at Dortmund, did he never go past four league goals? Yeah, that's right. He scored four league goals in each of his last two seasons, and obviously with us, he's up to 8 league goals, but 10 in all comps. With Chelsea, he scored 9 Premier League goals in his first season, 2019-20. And he also got one in the Champions League. But yeah, with us, as I say, he's on 8 goals, 6 assists in the league. And that takes him over in terms of goal contributions. And there's still double figures games left for him to add to that. So I think it just goes to show what a, you know, he's been the signing of the summer, hasn't he? You know, the you can't argue with it. And he scored big goals. A lot of these goals have been winners. Or goals to get us back into games. I think a Newcastle away, if he hadn't have equalised at that time, then we wouldn't even be talking about a Europa League game just before this. So full credit to him, because I know there's a lot of people who think that, in general, myself and Isaac, as the editors, are Euro trash who don't appreciate what Pooley does for us. But full of praise for him. Also, another thing to point out while I'm looking at the stats page here, it was the first time that Chow and Tomori had started together for 103 days since November 28th against Dortmund in the Champions League. So we kept a clean sheet with those two as they were. As you mentioned, Chow still looks a little rusty to me. And as you also mentioned, I think when Tomori's back, we completely change as a team, you know, with the recovery pace that he offers. And it's not just that, like, he's so confident in build-up by now. Him and Teo have a really, really good understanding. And I think if we can sort of get the centre-back pairing gelled, then we've got a much better chance going into the latter stages of the Europa League, without a doubt. And they will definitely be enough to help us keep clean sheets against teams like Empoli, whereby in recent months we've actually struggled to do that for various reasons. Second half was a little bit underwhelming, but as I kind of alluded to earlier, Pioli said, like, we played the game we had to play. So I think the instruction was probably game management and hope that Atalanta take points from Juve so we jump into second anyway. And if that was the plan, it came off, you know?
Yeah.
We are now second.
It worked perfectly. I mean, he made, I think, the right subs.
Brought on
Musa, you know, another player who came on and didn't start at 100%, but finished very strong. He made that crazy great run at the end where he'd win the entire pitch. It was unfortunate it didn't end in a goal, to be honest with you. It was really fucking nice. So good run from him.
Yeah.
Kalulu came on, bailed out Chow, looked strong, looked good, looked very muscular built. So, you know,
he's stacked now, isn't he? Like,
yeah, big boy. Good for him. And then who else came on? Chukwueze looked really bad in his first 10-15 again. And then again, towards the end of it, he really just picked up. He didn't put anything away. Again, it's unfortunate, but he deserved one, right? He looked great.
That was enough for me to say, give him a start on Thursday. Yeah. Maybe even give him a couple of starts. Say to Pulisic, like, you've played overtime. We might need to use you in the last 20, 30 of a game that's coming up, but Chuck, we're going to give you a couple of starts in a row. That way he has the confidence to try things, because he knows he's got another game after that, or he's got more minutes coming. And who knows, it might just unlock him. But I don't see a way that we salvage Chukwueze's first season without doing that.
You can't do anything if you don't play. On the flip side of that, you know, we see Pulisic's the best season of his career. He's in hot form. Benching him gives him a rest. So two things will happen. He's going to rest and come back better, or he gets cold. You know, those are your options.
Yeah.
You know? Do I think he'll get cold off of one or two games? Probably not. But I do know that he does his best when his confidence is high and he's just playing, you know, let the kid play. So it depends on what we need right now. You know, there was something on Twitter someone posted, and it was Okafor striker, Liao left wing, Chukwueze right, and Pulisic is an attacking mid, and Liao actually liked the photo. I don't think that works too well, but maybe it'd be something worth seeing if Chukwueze really comes good. And, you know, you can't bench Pulisic forever. He's the clear starter. But if Chukwueze comes good, maybe you do work something around to that and see what you could do. The only downside is then you're short a backup right wing, which is exactly why we signed two right wingers. So you don't want to force yourself thin when you just simply don't have to be. But yeah, he looked good. Giroud came on and pretty invisible, but more visible than Jovic, which tends to be the case when he starts, as I said earlier. And then Adley came on towards the end just to close out the game. And I didn't think he was fantastic, but he was on for stoppage time. You know, what do you expect?
Yeah.
But overall, it was fairly routine. Could ask for a few more goals. I feel like since I pointed out that we scored like 2.45 goals a game or whatever it was, we scored one or less every game.
Yeah, in the league, so. Yeah, I don't mind. I'll take a 1-0, especially with how our defensive record has been. But it's sort of like you take the 1-0 against Napoli at home. You know, a team that has quite a lot going forward and can be dangerous. And when you win 1-0 at home against Empoli, I mean, people forget how satisfied we were after beating Empoli 1-0 in the season that we went on to win the Scudetto. You know, it was in the second half of the season. It was a really, really scrappy game. They made it very difficult for us. I think it was a free kick that was cleared, or a corner that was cleared, and Kalulu leathered one in from the edge of the box. So it was quite poetic that he made his San Siro return in this particular fixture. But yeah, look, you bank the 3 points and you bank the clean sheet at this stage, and you hope that players gain confidence from it. They had that one moment, which was the Destro header that was thankfully straight at Maignan. If he'd have scored against us, I mean, fuck me. I remember when one of the banter era moments, and we still intend to do a bonus podcast on this, but I remember when we had Destro on loan for the second half of the 13-14 season, or was it 14-15 season, I think, from Roma. And he scored against his parent club in the last game of the season and decided to go absolutely apeshit celebrating. And then he had to go back to Roma the next, you know, literally after that game. And I thought, if he'd have scored against us 10 years on, fucking 10 years on from that moment, then that would have been it. I think I'd have probably liquidated the site. Top and flop.
Top, I'm going to give it to Tomori just because it was nice to have him back. And I thought you could see our game plan again. But look, this wasn't a team that really did anything to us. And maybe that was because of Tomori and Chow's return. I don't know. But if you had to pick an offensive player, then I guess I'd go Pulisic for scoring. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm going to pick Tomori just because I haven't said his name in months.
I was very happy to see Tomori back. I thought he looked back to his sharp best, definitely. I think Okafor was probably the brightest of the front four in terms of what he created in open play. Obviously, Pulisic got the goal, so he gets the headlines, but I was happy with Okafor. He was arguably wasteful in a couple of times when he cut inside onto his right, and he should have tested the keeper more with a shot, or perhaps could have passed to the far side where there was a runner, usually Calabria, or Florenzi, sorry. And But in general, I thought he was pretty good. And I think we saw from Okafor why he can be that deputy left winger, as well as a centre forward, you know, if we're playing two up front or whatever. But I'll read these stats. 100% aerial duels won. 93% pass accuracy, 88 out of 95. 118 touches, 7 passes into the final third, 7 duels won, 5 chances created, 3 accurate crosses, 3 recoveries, 2 tackles, 1 accurate long ball. Who was that?
Maignan. I don't know. Who was it?
Mickey Maignan. It was Ismail Benacer.
Ah, good.
And I thought he was very, very good. I thought that we saw a slightly different role from him in this game, one where he was actually the one getting further forward to try create from us. He got the hockey assist for the goal, but he could have had more than that, you know, in terms of what he did in the build-up. As the stats show, he was a good threat and he was important in both phases, you know. Was one of his best performances since coming back. Can't overreact. It was against Empoli, but it was against Empoli, his former club. So was he,
there you go,
again fired up? I don't know. But yeah.
I think the story here is just how nice it is to have our players back from injury.
Mm.
You know, we still have Pobega out. He's the only one injured right now.
He's expected to come back sooner. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Fingers crossed nobody drops between now and then, because we are at 1,038 days since the last time we had a fully fit squad. That's a number I should never have to say. So if I could stop keeping track of that, it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But here we are. So hopefully he comes back soon. I don't want to say irrelevant player because the man's in the infirmary right now, but definitely not someone we're missing in the moment. It's just that is the last squad player to be hurt. So
mm-hmm. And even Caldara has come back and played competitive minutes, albeit for the Primavera. But... he was awful and yanked off after.
I really thought he was going to get a start in the first team.
Yeah, that
just that dire of a situation.
Yeah. Flop.
I'm going to go with Jovic. You know, even the players that I could point out and say they started really bad still finished strong. Jovic, I cannot think of a moment where he touched the ball. Mm. And that's not good from your striker.
No. There was a couple of moments, as I sort of mentioned in the first half, you know, where we got the ball down the right side for Pulisic to put in a dangerous ball. And both times that he got one to the edge of the 6-yard box, it was Okafor who was just beaten to it. Mm. Thinking, hang on, that's the left winger. Where's Jovic? Like, he should be there for those. That should be his bread and butter to bury that from inside the box. Like, where was he? I think he was guilty, and I'm agreeing with you, he's my flop as well. I think he was guilty of dropping a little bit too deep at times, and we've got a real problem at the moment whereby for 75% of the games that they start, both Giroud and Jovic seem to be useless at getting involved in the game. So if they're not scoring, they're doing literally nothing. And it's like playing without a man. And therefore, it puts more pressure on the wingers to create. It certainly puts more pressure on Liao. You can see it when he tries to do things on his own. And also with RLC being so, I would say limited, but like, you almost know what you're getting from him now. It's a mixture of powerful runs and bad decisions. You can't really have those central two players being so unreliable. And I think that that's where in the summer, you know, we sort of fantasized in the chat about like the idea of bringing in, we know we're going to invest in a new center forward, but can we haggle a deal for like Coop Miners or something? That is fucking team changing stuff.
Yeah.
Like we instantly look and, you know, yeah, it's fantasy football a little bit, but just food for thought in it. Like with Jovic, Gazzetta said everyone else seems to be on the, as in every other major source, seem to be on the side of like nothing's been decided yet, wait and see how he finishes the season. But Gazzetta said there's a less than 50% chance that we actually keep Jovic, and it's more likely that we sign two strikers in the summer, therefore, or we keep Giroud instead, basically. Which is interesting because I would have said it was more than 50% based on what he's shown. But as you mentioned earlier, I think we're seeing that he only really works when he plays in two or he plays with someone close to him.
Yeah.
We saw Loftus-Cheek move closer to him in this game to just try and cause a bit of disruption. The problem is that it left a little bit of a hole then in behind where Loftus-Cheek would normally make his runs and score his goals. So something to figure out, something to work on. But by no means am I slating Jovic. I think he's contributed far more than we expected already from a free transfer. Verona, quickly do this, dust this off. I'm not sure we're going to have time. When have you got to go? Like 10 minutes?
No, I could go a bit longer.
All right, cool. Yeah, as I say, we've got a European game on Thursday. Tough to predict how the team is going to look for this one, but I am presuming that we might revert back a little bit to the Empoli 11, more of the Empoli 11. But I think after this game, we've got a week off. So maybe we can get away with starting our strongest team in two games in a row. I mean, look, these... I know we've moaned about rotation and managing minutes and stuff and the injury crisis, but if these players cannot, having spent so long out, play two games in a week, then probably should pack up and fuck off home. But yeah, I would field a strong team for this. We need to hang on to second, and we need to take advantage of the fact that so many of the teams below us and around us seem to be playing each other at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, this weekend was Atalanta, Juve and Fiorentina, Roma, Lazio, although they're kind of gone now, dropped points against Udinese last night. So, you know, it's another chance to just make sure that league position is locked up. That's all the insight I have. Let me have a look at the Verona. Yeah.
Verona's an awful team. They may be in 15th, but they're one game away from relegation right now. Every team from 13 down is within 3 points of the relegation spot. So that, towards the end of the season, causes a lot of problems. Yeah, we're in the final stretch, last 10 games here. But Verona's not that team. They have they're ranked 17th for goals scored per match at 0.9 goals a game. I mean, that puts them obviously in relegation contention as they are. So, and with us having the second most goals scored, actually, did Roma jump us on that? Let me check.
Yes. Yeah, they did.
They did. Wow.
They've been a different animal, you know, them lot under De Rossi. Under De Rossi,
yeah.
And are they too far out to, they're not too far out to snatch fourth, are they? I just wonder what happens to Bologna now Xerxes out for a month, you know?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah.
But as far as Verona's concerned, I think we put him to the sword. This, if there's ever a team that we could really just show them the business right now, I would say it'd be Verona more than anyone, more than a Sassuolo, who Verona did beat, actually. more than like just any of the other teams. I'm trying to say who's in.
Well, look, they've won their last two games without conceding.
Yeah, but I mean, look at who they played.
Sassuolo and Lecce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we could really do work here. Because they've won those games, they're going to be willing to play more open and try and do something. And if we field our best 11, like I think we should, but we probably won't, knowing Pioli, it doesn't matter that there's an international break right after. I think we could make this one look simple.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope you're right. What was I talking about earlier? Of course, it's international break after this as well. So that should be an added motivation to field a stronger lineup and get the job done early in this one. Bentegodi is a difficult place to go. It seems to be. Like, even in the Scudetto season, we went behind and we had to fight back. We did.
SDAO Masterclass won that one for us.
Both of them. Yeah, both games we went behind, didn't we? We went 2-0 down at home, and then Castillejo, and then we went behind away, and that was when Tonali scored, and I think Florenzi scored to make it 3-1. And I remember the game earlier this season where Verona played Inter, and they equalised late on, and then Inter scored, and they had that penalty in like the 98th minute to salvage a 2-2 draw and missed it. So they have caused problems for the bigger sides. They drew 2-2 with Juve about a month ago. And I'm just looking at the games that they've got after this. Cagliari and Genoa, you know, those are potentially season-defining games for where they are and the teams that they find around them. But yeah, Marco Baroni, their head coach, I've just noticed. Their top scorer is no longer there. Cyril Ngonge was their top scorer with 6 goals, and he's now at Napoli, so there's that.
Trying to find... The last time we lost to them was in 2017. It was a rout, 3-0. Jesus. Interesting.
Yeah, Moise that was Keane an awful scored against game. Us.
I forgot he ever played there. Yeah. And yeah, we had a red card too. Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter. Suso in stoppage time. Anyways, 2017 was the last time they beat us, and since then we've only not won twice, two draws in that entire run. So let's keep that up. You know, let's keep winning.
Let's keep that up. Let's keep that up. That being said, my prediction is a 1-1 draw. I think we get the classic European hangover, and we have to battle from behind to get a point in this one.
Well, if we don't field our best team, if we field a bit of a weaker side, then I will say 2-1 victory. If we just field our boys and let them get the game that I know we can play, 4-0.
Again, just thinking about that international break, and I know an international break isn't a break anymore because we've got so many players that jet off to represent their countries, but, you know, it would be brilliant to sign off with a win in this and to be in the hat for the quarterfinals of the Europa League, potentially with a favourable draw. You know, we'll find out on Friday. Let's do a couple of questions and then we will wrap this one up. Oh, we got 10. After getting none last week, we got 10 this week. Rajat, why does Pioli refuse to try a 3-4-3 formation? Now, we're not going to answer this one because what we're going to say is, go and check out the bonus podcast. We talked about potential formation experimentation. Again, you could try a week for free, so it's not like we're asking for your money immediately, but just go and try it and see what you like. AJ, Hassan Abuja, I think he's trying to steal your brand a little bit here, Hassan. Number one, he says, hear me out. Number one, sell Maignan, get Buongiorno plus Vanja Milinkovic-Savic, who's the Torino keeper, obviously. Number two, get his brother Sergey from Saudi Arabia. Who would say no to that?
Me.
Sergey. Because he's on about 15 million a year.
Yeah, I think all those players are fantastic. Do I think Vanya would be an upgrade over Mike? No, but I would take Buongiorno, obviously, in a heartbeat. And I haven't watched Milinkovic-Savic, Sergey Milinkovic-Savic, since he left. I don't even know what you use to stream the Saudi League outside of, you know, a dodgy one. And it's 2024. I'm not using one of those websites anymore.
He's got 9 goals, 6 assists in 20 games.
Okay. So comes back here half about 6-3, you know? No, that's fine. It's fine. Yeah. I'm sure he'd be fantastic. He'd probably be an upgrade over Loftus Cheek right now, but I don't know if I'd do that. How old is he? He's close to 30.
29.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, I do think we need more players like that in our team. You know, players that are in their prime years and have proven to be dominant in Serie A. That would be good. I like the Vanja Milinkovic-Savic shout. I had in my head, I was going to instantly say, yeah, but he's years older than Maignan. He's not. He's the same age. That's scary. Really? You're telling me that this man is younger than Mike Maignan.
Yeah. Look, there's something about being bald with the beard, man.
Just a little side by side there. Age is in net next season.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I'm not saying you look older, by the way. He does, though, in particular. Interesting. I would love Sergey Milinkovic-Savic, but I think his pay packet now is too high, you know, to be thinking about coming back to Serie A. You know, he's got one big contract to see out there, and he's set up for life, isn't he? There are some good replacements out there, though, for Maignan. You know, I maintain my stance that out of him, Teo and Liao, he's the most replaceable. I love him. I think he brings leadership. I think he's brilliant with the ball at his feet and everything you want from a modern goalkeeper. However, it's so often what's in front, and at the moment what's in front of him is broken. So if you need to change a few parts around to get a winning formula, then so be it. Oliver, not me. Someone else stealing brands. When are the fixture dates and times going to be confirmed for April? The answer is we don't know, because Serie A are a fucking liability when it comes to announcing things. On a serious note, it really should be before the end of the week. I think they're waiting for the Europa League draw to be done, because then they know which games they need to move forwards and backwards. Edward O'Donnell, what chance do you give us of being able to keep hold of all three of Maignan, Teo, and Liao?
Oh, I'd say it's still pretty high, to be honest with you. 75 to 80%. I don't think, unless someone activates a release clause for Liao, I don't see him going anywhere. Same with Teo and Mike. Obviously, they don't have release clauses, but it would have to be a pretty historic offer for us to sell them. not to say that they're, you know, completely un for sale. Everyone's for sale. That's the way it works in this game now. But yeah, we're not looking to get just offload them.
Everyone's favorite reliable transfer source for Fabrizio Romano said that if we are to sell Teo, then it's probably going to take a world record fee for a fullback, which would be 100 mil plus, and that sounds fair. Like we look at the market, we've seen Cucurella go from Brighton to Chelsea for like 80. Yeah. And you're thinking, yeah, we're going to need a little bit more than that. So yeah, I actually think there's a good chance of us hanging on to each of them. I don't think Teo wants to move, to be honest. Liao has done interviews recently whereby he said he sees his future at Milan and he sees it still as the right club to grow at. And Maignan, I don't think he has that market at the moment. Even though everyone's saying we might get bids from Bayern for like 60, 80 mil, I just don't see it. Like, he's had such a down season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people can recognize that, like, a lot of it does have to do with the back line this season and how injury-prone it's been. And I do think, like you said, there are replacements. Milinkovic-Savic is a great one. However, dealing with Cairo is nearly impossible. So I don't see that happening too often, especially if we want to get Buongiorno as well. They might be thinking like a 100 mil package, and we're not going to do that because we're looking to get a striker and a center back instead. So that's where I think we're at with that. I don't think we sell any of them.
I agree with you. I'm edging towards that we end up keeping all three of them. Perhaps, you know, there's renewal caveats with Maignan and obviously the future of the head coach, but I don't foresee a massive sale this summer like some people seem to. Florian asks, are y'all actually going to answer questions this time? Yes, we are, and that was your question.
Obviously, no.
Frankie Scarpino, maybe this is a topic for a bonus article or a bonus podcast, so we're going to keep this on the back burner, but I just want to recognise that we've seen it. Draft a starting 11 coach and bench from Serie A, but only one selection allowed from each team.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. As I say, on Friday, providing that we get through, we're obviously going to talk about who we get in the draw. But for the international break, that could be absolutely perfect. We've got a question from Michael Gambino, and I'm going to phrase it in... This is the last one. Phrase it in a certain way and see what you think. So this particular player is a centre-forward. He has 21 goals and 7 assists in 35 games this season. He's currently scoring, on average, a goal every 123 minutes. He is 24 years of age. He has a contract expiring in 2025. Does he sound like a good candidate to you to be our striker for next season?
Is that Giroud?
It's not. It's Jonathan David. He's back in form. Big time.
I did see he scored like 9 goals in his last 5 games or something. But, I saw it on paper, not in real life. So don't know if it actually happened or not. Yeah. Look, those are great numbers, you know. Jonathan David somehow always comes up with them, but I've just never seen the goal, and I've looked. So yeah, we'll see.
If we've got any German listeners that are familiar with the Bielefeld conspiracy, then that might be the Jonathan David thing all over. It's like Bielefeld doesn't exist. Nobody knows anyone who's from there, and that kind of thing. Do Jonathan David's goals exist? In his last goal last game against Stade Rennais, he scored twice. Before that, once, got an assist. Hat-trick against Le Havre before that. Didn't score against PSG. He got 2 the game before that. Like, he is on a heater. There's no doubt about it. However, look, we might be able to get him in a favourable deal here. There's no two ways about it. And you think to that Liao clause and the fact that we paid the fine and removed the sell-on clause, but did we pay that fine also to get a little bit of favour when it comes to future operations with them? I guess we'll find out. So we might be able to get him in a cut price deal. And if we do say goodbye to Giroud and Jovic, then maybe we have to buy a more expensive striker and a cheaper striker. Maybe a big sale facilitates that as well. I just think with David, have we not seen from sort of Jovic when he starts games that we need something a little bit different profile-wise? I'm not saying that they're the same player. I just think that they might struggle up front on their own, especially in Serie A, you know, where teams are not as gung-ho.
Does David play in a two-striker formation?
Good question. I'll quickly look that up. But
I thought he was the lone striker, but again, I don't watch, so.
I feel like they've been playing a... I'll just look at their last game that they drew 2-2 with Rennes at the weekend. They play a 4-3-3, to be fair, according to this. So,
yeah,
he's clearly doing a decent job. He scored twice in the game before that against Sturm Graz in the round of 16 of the Conference League as well, and he played up front on his own in that. So, yeah, okay, I'll take it.
If you were to give me this entire 11 that I'm looking at right now and take out David, the only person I recognize is Nabil Bentaleb, and that's just because I remember the big Spurs spending spree when they sold Bale. There's no reason that should be a starting 11 in this year. The fact that that team's in fourth place right now is crazy.
So I know that Lenny Yoro guy is like meant to be an incredible talent. He's been linked with some of the centre back. He's been linked with some big teams. Obviously, they had Jallo, who's gone to Juve now. We were linked with that Zhigarova guy, right winger. I think
they have Titi as well, but he's hurt. Okay.
Yeah, that Gomez in midfield is Angel Gomez, who was like a big talent at Man United and decided to fuck off. They got Remy Cabella, Yusuf Yazici. Wow. We were linked with Yazici in the last week.
Interesting. I remember. Okay, so I do know a few more players, but that lineup, I didn't. Fuck me, man. I mean, if that's who David's playing with and that's how the numbers he's putting up, then yeah, bring him in.
On the subject of familiar names, you know, the guy who got sent off for Slavia Prague was called Elhadj Diouf. Do you remember Elhadj Diouf vaguely? The one who was at Liverpool? The guy who's
I was going to say, I remember Diouf.
And then he went to Leeds and then he went to Rangers. And it's not the same guy. It's not the same guy. But yeah, I just remember him. And when I saw the name, I thought it cannot be. Then I saw that he don't really look like him. We will wrap it up there. Been a good one, action-packed as always when we've covered in four games. Got through as many questions as we could, but you're not here next week.
Yeah, I will be in the Bahamas. I'm leaving on Friday, so hopefully not on a Boeing plane. You know, fingers crossed right now.
See, the Boeing whistleblower died.
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah. Anyways, before we get fucking...
Let's move on. Yeah.
Unless we do, if we record Tuesday, I get back Monday. It's just a weekend trip. So,
yeah, I think we can do that, to be honest.
Because it will be episode 300. So, action packed. Madison will yawn a few times and it'll be good.
Yeah, we should probably get drunk or something, but it will be in the morning for you guys. Have a good trip, mate. And we will be back in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!